anyone knows about the Songs of Degrees. Who brought together the Songs of Degrees? Why, good King Hezekiah of Judah. It was Hezekiah that specially organized the Songs of Degrees. And in the middle of the Songs of Degrees, he found one psalm that was written by Solomon. You see, Psalm 127, a Song of Degrees. It says here, for Solomon, but you'll see the margin, it says of Solomon. I believe this psalm was written by Solomon, but Hezekiah plucked it out of the records of Israel and inserted it into his Songs of Degrees. And you know what this psalm celebrates? This psalm celebrates the joy of children that are heading towards the kingdom. Verse 3, lo, children are an heritage of Yahweh, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. And the psalmist sees the idea of a man who draws back the arrow and the bow, and the arrow is straight, and the arrow is his son, and he shoots it off to Zion. And it pictures the idea of a man who has a quiver full of straight arrows heading towards the kingdom. How happy that man is. You know what's really interesting about all that, brothers and sisters? You see, this psalm was written by Solomon. Do you know what the divine record tells us about Solomon's family? He only had one son. And he wasn't straight. His name was Rehoboam. And he undid all the good that his father stood for. And Solomon, although he wrote a psalm about the happiness of children that grow up straight and true, never ever really experienced that in his own life, because his own son was a fool. And you know what the record says about Hezekiah? The record says he only ever had one son. And his son undid all that his father stood for. His name was Manasseh. And his son was a fool. And he wasn't straight. And I think you see that when Hezekiah found that psalm written by Solomon, he felt a strange connection of thought with Solomon, because they both experienced the tragedy of a son who went astray. Yes, you find there's a strange chemistry in the record between Hezekiah and Solomon. It touches upon us in several different places in the narrative. Now, when we come back to these chapters, I believe that a very fruitful source of study in 25 to 29 of Proverbs is to realize that these were Proverbs written by Solomon, and therefore they have application in his life, but they were copied out by Hezekiah, and therefore they have application in Hezekiah's life. And a wonderful study is to do just that, is to try and trace the thought of these Proverbs back into the life of Solomon and also out into the life of Hezekiah, to see the actual application of them in the lives of those kings themselves. Shall we take, well, just two examples from each? There's actually many that we could do, but let's take two from each. Now, in chapter 25, by way of example, we're told in Proverbs 25 and verse, let's have a look here. Proverbs 25 verse 5. It says there, take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. So here's a principle, you see. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. Do you know that, you see, that actually happened in Solomon's life. You see, Solomon understood that principle. If you come back to the 1st of Kings chapter 2, that is in fact precisely what happened at the time of the establishment of his reign. In the 1st of Kings chapter 2, we read these words, you see, starting at verse 23, 1 Kings 2 verse 23. It says there, then King Solomon swear by Yahweh, saying, God do so to me and more also, if Adonijah have not spoken this word against his own life. Now therefore, as Yahweh liveth, which hath established me and set me on the throne of David my father, and who hath made me an house as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death this day. You see, Adonijah was a wicked man, wasn't he? He sought for the kingship. He sought to usurp the authority of Solomon. And Solomon, in fact, has this wicked man taken away from before him.
and not just he. But in verse 26 we're told, "And unto Abiathar the priest said the king, Get thee to Anathoth, unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death. But I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord God before David my father." So Solomon, verse 27, thrusts out Abiathar from being priest, that he might fulfill the word of God. Abiathar was removed from before him. Verse 33, "Their blood shall be upon the head of Joab, but upon David and upon his seed and upon his house and upon his throne there shall be peace." So Benaiah, verse 34, "The son of Jehoiada went up and fell upon him and slew him, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness." So Joab was removed. So firstly the priest, and then the military. And then in verse 44, "Remember this man, the king said moreover to Shimei." Now Shimei, of course, belonged to the royal house of Saul. The previous house, the previous royal house, remember. And he says to him in verse 44, "Thou knowest all the wickedness which thine heart is privy to, that thou didst to David my father. Therefore, Yahweh shall return thy wickedness upon thy head." So the king, verse 46, commanded Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, which went out and fell upon him, that he died. So you see, the wicked were taken away from before the king, weren't they? Abiathar, Adonijah, Joab, Shimei. All these wicked ones, these wicked persons, were removed from before the king, King Solomon. And as a result of that, verse 45 of this chapter says, "And the throne of David shall be established before Yahweh forever." And the end of verse 46 says, "And the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon." And Proverbs 25 and verse 5 had said, "Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness." Oh yes, Solomon knew all about that principle, didn't he? You see, the Proverbs are found outworked in the lives of these kings. And out of that, of course, we're going to draw a principle, which God willing we'll come to tomorrow. What about chapter 27, verse 10? In chapter 27 of Proverbs, and verse 10, it says this. "Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity, for better is a neighbour that is near than a brother far off. Thine own friend and thy father's friend," says the record. Now, if you come to the 1st of Kings chapter 5, you'll find an illustration of that principle in the life of Solomon. Solomon knew all about this. The 1st of Kings chapter 5, and reading firstly from verses 1 and 2. And there it says, "And Hiram king of Tyre sent his servants unto Solomon, for they had heard that he had anointed him king in the room of his father, for Hiram was ever a lover of David." Now the word lover here is the word Ahab in the Hebrew, which simply is one of the Hebrew words for friend. Hiram was ever a friend of David. So he was David's friend, says the record. But in verse 2 we're told, "And Solomon sent to Hiram." And in verse 7 we have the response of Hiram. It says, "It came to pass, when Hiram heard the words of Solomon, that he rejoiced greatly. And he said, Blessed be Yahweh this day, which hath given unto David a wise son over this great people." And verse 12 says, "And Yahweh gave Solomon wisdom as he promised him. And there was peace between Hiram and Solomon, and they too made a league together." But you see, this was his father's friend, wasn't it? "And Solomon forsook not his father's friend, but made him his own friend. And he also entered into league with Hiram, as had his father David." Oh yes, Solomon understood these principles in the Proverbs he wrote. And a very fruitful line of study is to trace the thoughts of those proverbs back into the life of the king. And just as they applied to Solomon, well, so they applied to Hezekiah. Why do you think Hezekiah had written these down? Because, you see, these were proverbs that he was particularly interested in. He saw them as relevant and seemly in terms of his own kingship in the land. So a couple of illustrations then from the life of Hezekiah. Well, I think one rather nice one is chapter 25 and verse 13. As the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refresheth the soul of his masters. So we have the idea of a messenger going forth with a message who presumably comes back with an answer that, because it's been faithfully delivered, refreshes the soul of he that sent the messenger. Now come and have a look at the 2nd of Chronicles, chapter 30. The 2nd of Chronicles, chapter 30. As the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refresheth the soul of his masters. Do you know that in the 2nd of Chronicles and chapter 30, Hezekiah decided that he would keep a special Passover feast. You'll remember this. And he decided that he would invite all to come from all parts of both Judah and Israel. And so we're told in verse 5, so they established a decree to make proclamations throughout all Israel. That's important there. From Beersheba even to Dan, that they should come to keep the Passover unto Yahweh Elohim of Israel at Jerusalem. For they had not done it of a long time and such sort as it was written. So the posts went with the letters. Ah, here we are. You see, here's the faithful messengers that have now been sent forth by the king. The posts, the postmen. They were the runners, as the Hebrew word means, and they ran out with the message of the king to invite all and sundry. Verse 6 says, they went with the letters from the king and his princes throughout all Israel and Judah according to the commandment of the king. Verse 10 says, so the posts passed from city to city through the country of Ephraim and Manasseh, even unto Zebulun. But they laughed them to scorn and mocked them. Nevertheless, verse 11, divers of Asher and Manasseh and of Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. And also in Judah, the hand of God was to give them one heart to do the commandment of the king and the princes by the word of Yahweh. And the messengers came back, you see, and they said to Hezekiah, we have taken the message, and some are coming. Some of Zebulun, some of Asher, some of Manasseh, they have humbled themselves. They're on the way. They're coming to keep the Passover. And the heart of the king was glad, and his soul was refreshed, because the faithful messengers had returned with a cheering message of hope concerning those who would come to keep the Passover. Oh yes, I think Hezekiah knew all about the cheering effect, the refreshing effect of faithful messengers. What about this one here? Proverbs chapter... Well, let's take Proverbs 27, verse 1. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. Now, I'd like you to come to the prophecy of Isaiah and to the 38th chapter. Now, in Isaiah 38 and verse 1, we read these words. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, came unto him and said unto him, thus saith Yahweh, set thine house in order, or thou shalt die and not live. And if ever there was a man who understood the meaning of the proverb, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth, it was this man, wasn't it? He found that on one particular day in his life, the prophet Isaiah walked in and said, you're going to die, set your house in order. And the man may not boast of tomorrow as if it belongs to him, because it does not. You know the tragedy, by the way, of Isaiah 38 The tragedy, of course, was that when Isaiah had said, you see in verse 1, set thine house in order, Hezekiah knew full well that he couldn't do that. Because, you see, he didn't have a house. Because, you see, he hadn't yet married. He hadn't raised up a seed to the line of David. In fact, because of his endeavours in the nation, good though they may have been, he had neglected to raise up a child so that the very line of Messiah may be preserved. He had jeopardised the line of Messiah through lack of marriage and lack of family. And when the prophet said to him, set thine house in order, it suddenly must have hit Hezekiah with the realization of what he had not attended to in his responsibilities as king. Boast not of tomorrow. Oh yes, Hezekiah knew all about that. And verse 2 says, Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed unto Yahweh and said, remember now, O Yahweh, I beseech thee, how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore, and God hearkened to the cries of his servant. And you read these words in verse 5. This is good Bible study, by the way, which is good Bible reading, isn't it? You see, the two things are synonymous. Good Bible study is all really about good Bible reading. Now you see verse 5. Just look at this. Go and say to Hezekiah, came the message. Thus saith the Lord, the God of David, thy father. Now, why do you think that the record specifically makes mention of David there? Isn't it because that's what Hezekiah had done, that he had jeopardized the house of David, that he had jeopardized the line of David, that he had not produced a godly seed, the seed from which Messiah would spring? Thus says the God of David, thy father, I have heard thy prayer, and I will add unto thy days 15 years. And in those 15 years, you know the first thing he did? He got married. And he had a son. And his wife's name, of course, was, anybody know? Anyone know Hezekiah's wife's name? Her name was Hephzibah. And it's believed that she was the daughter of Isaiah the prophet. We can't tell for sure, but it's a nice thought. Now, brothers and sisters, we're not kings yet, but we ought to be preparing. And the thing is that although the principle of rulership is not exercised by us in the fullest sense yet, we can prepare even today, because we're rulers in the making. And there are principles of rulership in life today which ought to be practiced. In our marriages, in our families. In marriage, it says in Genesis, thy desire shall be subject to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee, says Genesis 3 verse 16. In families, it says in the 1st of Timothy 3 verse 4, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. In the law of Moses, honour thy father and mother, so that a mother was to become the undisputed queen of her household, and worthy of respect. In the Ecclesia, in the 1st of Timothy 5, verse 17, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honour. And finally, in our own lives, Proverbs 16 and verse 32 says, he that ruleth his own spirit is better than he that taketh a city. So the principles of rulership ought to be exercised in our lives even now. And from these chapters, therefore, we can learn wonderful and great guidance so that we today may prepare for that kingship of tomorrow.